Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network, AFR, American Family Radio. We thank you for listening to AFR, as always. We thank you for listening. Which one is it, Ed Battagliano? Where would I use the comma there?
We thank you for listening. No comma.
We thank you for listening, but I always say that, so... As always, we thank you for listening.
As always, comma, we thank you for listening.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. That's what I'm trying to say. That's why we have Ed Battagliano here on the program to help us with our English.
I'm glad to help, you know.
In any way you can.
In any way I can.
But it makes you a more valuable member of the team.
It does.
Huh?
If increases
job security.
That's right. If you have a question, you say, get that Battagliano guy in here. We're going to ask him. That's a good place to be.
All right, welcome to our program, folks. Ed, you want to give us a preview of what we're going to be discussing today?
Yeah, in just a few minutes, we're going to have Dr. Erwin Lutzer on. We're going to be talking about conscience. How can we get a clear conscience and how God has designed our conscience to help us, as well as the blood of Christ to clean it from dead works? We're going to have Fred Jackson on later on to talk about some of the top headlines. Next hour, Jan Markell, founder of Olive Tree Ministries. We're going to be talking about understanding the times with Jan. So some good stuff today.
What do you think about an NFL player not standing for the national anthem but sitting on the bench?
Well, you're talking about Colin Kaepernick, San Francisco one-time starting quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, kind of created a firestorm of controversy that he did not need at this stage in his career. I mean, there are people talking about him being finished as an NFL quarterback. But what he decided to do, I think in two preseason games, I'm not sure about the previous one, but I know this past game, he, instead of standing for the national anthem, again, preseason game, but instead of standing, he sat down on the bench and then issued a statement saying that he did not want to stand for a flag to honor a country that is oppressive. And he was talking specifically about policemen shooting young black males.
It's oppressive to black people. What are you saying? People of color? Other color?
He says, I'm reading now one of his statements here. He said, I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent. The country is representing people the way that it's supposed to. You know, that is yesterday comments made to the media. He had initially just simply issued a statement, but yesterday was the first day that the NFL required all players to be available to the media. And, of course, Kaepernick was asked about his earlier statements. And I'm looking for the actual initial quote.
It was about that. Here's where I ask you the question. This is a country of 320 million people or so, right?
Right.
And so Kaepernick, the NFL quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, not going to stand for the national anthem because he says there's problems, there's injustices for
I found the quote.
Okay, you read it. Yeah, this is a quote from him about why he's sitting on the bench during the national anthem.
Right. He says there's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically, police brutality. He says there's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. People are being given paid leave for killing people. That's not right. That's just not right by anyone's standards. So he's talking about policemen who shoot someone, they get paid leave, they're not prosecuted, police brutality, and he believes that is a manifestation of the oppression of the white majority over people of color. And that's why he did not want to honor the flag by standing during the national anthem. And he's gotten a lot of blowback for it, some limited support from you know, from other players. And
the irony of a player with an NFL a black quarterback complaining about white oppression as he drives home in his Mercedes Benz,
right,
and goes to his mansion is just a little more than ironic, don't you think?
Yeah, it's hard to take. It's harder to take his complaint seriously when, you know, listen, Alan West, former representative from House of Representatives from Florida, a black American, okay?
Right.
He happens to be conservative.
Right.
He says, it's hard for me to take this kind of thing seriously. We've got the nation's first black president.
Right, twice elected.
Twice elected. He said, listen, you've got, you know, you've had black attorneys general, you know, Department of Justice is, you know, been headed by, you know, two black people. And, you know, he's, and Alan West is saying, it's kind of hard. He's talking about some of the high profile sheriffs. One is from, I think, his district, Alan West, but also, you know, you have David Clark up in Milwaukee and some of these other places. He says it's kind of hard to simply paint the entire nation as being oppressive when you have, at least in some quarters, blacks making great living, the highest political offices in the country, and Colin Kaepernick himself, okay, raised by two, by white parents, people. I guess adopted.
Right.
And he is a very wealthy man, you know. So, and that's not to say that his argument doesn't deserve to have a discussion around it. But to, I mean, basically, he's saying until these cops are put in jail, you know, whether or not juries convict him or not, until they're put in jail, he's not going to stand for the national anthem.
As I said earlier, this is a country of 320 million people or so. If you're going to wait for the day, which, by the way, he didn't cite any specific cases.
Right.
For Colin Kaepernick's world to exist, it's never going to exist.
Right.
So he's going to be sitting as long as he's an NFL player.
Right.
Because you can always find something.
Right.
To say, is it an injustice, therefore I'm not going to stand for the national anthem. I tell you what would be terrible, though, for the National Football League and for our country. We were having a meeting this morning with some of our team members here at AFA, if this became a trend. Now, the NFL said they're not going to fine him. They're not going to compel a person to stand for the national anthem.
And the San Francisco 49ers said the same thing.
Okay. That's a discussion, I guess, for another day. But no other NFL players did this, have done this, that I'm aware of.
Me either.
But can you imagine if half the NFL started sitting down on the bench during the national anthem?
You know, I think the NFL has every right now. I don't think they have the right to tell players on their private time what they can talk about, okay? But they do have the right to say, listen, a certain standard of respect, because, you know,
and
for
decorum.
Example, and decorum, I think they require, you know, when players go to the ballpark, don't they have to, they get off the bus, they have to wear a suit and tie?
Yeah.
I mean, they do have certain standards.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example from another sport. I know you're going to laugh. This is from hockey, but
I'm not. I respect you as a hockey fan.
In 2011, when the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup, they were, as per usual, they were invited by the president to come, you know, a couple months later to the White House to meet the president, President Obama.
Right.
And the goalie for the Boston Bruins, Tim Thomas, who's a very conservative person, said, I'm not going. I disagreed with that. He said, I'm not going to meet the White House to meet the president. I don't like the guy. I don't like his policies. I thought that was wrong. I thought Tim Thomas should have gone because you honor the office, whether you disagree with his politics or not, you honor the office. President Obama is our president. He won fair and square. Tim Thomas should have gone. And I just think
and
this is the same thing.
And what does it say,
thing.
Your teammates, too? I mean,
well, if you're going
to you're just saying there are institutions that we need to honor that exceed that are above whoever happens to whatever policies are.
Yeah.
Whoever happens to be in there. For example, in other words, you're saying Colin. Are you saying that the NFL then should require their players?
I think they should say you don't have to put your hand over your heart. Everyone stands because that's what you do.
It's our national anthem.
It's our national anthem. We support the country. We're not saying it's perfect. Everybody stands, or you're going to be fined. I think that's what they ought to do. So you want to lose money, you want to make a point, then you're going to get fined, just like the other rules that the NFL has. You know, you wear a suit, coat, and tie. You have to meet with the media.
He said, "This is Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback for San Francisco." Now, who knows how long he'll be quarterback? He's kind of borderline, but he says, "I'm not going to stand up and show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color." That's what he says.
Right.
I would like Mr. Kaepernick to show me a place in the world that's better than the United States for black people and people of color. Just point out. If he would, just give us an example of somewhere in the world that's better off for black people and people of other people of color. He didn't do that.
He's free. He wants to, if he wants to support, give money to Black Lives Matter or write something in the local newspaper, I think he's free. He should be free to do that. But when you're at the game, you're representing your team, you're representing the NFL, you've been given a pretty decent salary. I mean, just tongue in cheek, the guy makes a lot of money. He's got a contract of $115 million or something like that. $61 million guaranteed, I understand, Abe Hamilton was saying this morning in our meeting. You stand for the national anthem. That's just the way it is. You want to play for the league?
You can still complain about policies or politics or whatever you want to do. That's what you're saying. If he wants to use his platform to champion something, that's his right. But you're saying
there's certain minimum standards that they all should.
Okay. Well, they don't. The NFL doesn't. But the good thing is he's the only one thus far that do it. I'm just saying if this started to be a trend, then this would be a real problem. If the NFL players or NBA players and that went down to the college ranks, for example, and then went down to the high school ranks and you had people not standing for the national anthem, that would be terrible for our country, is what I'm saying.
It's going to be extremely divisive, and it's only going to make matters worse. It does not – I don't think it helps. Right. I don't think it helps the nation with some of the issues that we're dealing with. It doesn't help. It only hurts.
Right.
And I just think that it's a privilege to play in the National Football League. I mean, listen, it's no different than coming to work, here at American Family Association or any other business. The company has the right to. So, if I'm working, at a Fortune 500 company or a company on Wall Street, and they say, listen, the rules here are, you have to dress shirt and slacks or shirt and tie. You got to follow those rules. You can't say, well, self-expression. I want to prove a point.
Yeah. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. We'll follow this and see what happens, if there are any repercussions for Colin Kaepernick for the San Francisco 49ers. You want to welcome our next guest?
Absolutely. It's our honor to welcome Dr. Erwin Lutzer, who's been on this show many times. He's a best-selling author. He's also senior pastor of the Moody Church in Chicago, has been for over 35 years. He's written a book titled The Power of a Clear Conscience, Let God Free You from Your Past. Dr. Lutzer, welcome to the program.
So glad to be on with you this morning.
Well, let's start with probably the most basic question for people out there who are listening. Tell them from a biblical perspective, what is the conscience and what's its purpose?
Well, God created us with this inner voice. It is really a part of who we are. Everyone has a conscience. In fact, the Apostle Paul says that pagans who do not have the law as the Jews did will be judged by their conscience. So the conscience is a part of us. Actually, the word con means with, and then science means knowledge. It's a knowledge that we carry along with us. And no matter who you are, no matter what your background or religion, I can tell this about you, and that is that every single one of us have violated our consciences. We have done what we know was wrong, and later on there was this small sense of condemnation that says you have violated, you have done something wrong. And we've all experienced it. And Some people's conscience may be more sensitive than others. It's like walking through a machine at the airport. When you go through security, sometimes the machine is very sensitive. Sometimes my belt buckle might set it off, at other times not. In the very same way, consciences to some extent are conditioned, but at the same time, we really do have a conscience. And I might say this, the reason I wrote the book is because as a pastor, I've known people who, because of things in their past and their nagging conscience, have not been able to make progress in the Christian life. There's something that either they did and they haven't rectified it. They may have confessed it before God, but they've not straightened it out. They've not made restitution, because sometimes that might be possible and necessary. And so these are the kinds of issues that the book deals with.
You know, it seems like that there are a lot of people in the church who, like you said, struggle with shame. In fact, you talk about shame in the book. But now it's also true that the conscience can be misinformed, right? I mean, people can be raised thinking that X, Y, and Z is wrong, and they feel guilty about doing certain things because that's what they were taught, when there's really no biblical justification for believing that this is wrong. Is that right? I mean, the conscience can be misinformed.
Yeah, that's what the Apostle Paul was dealing with in Romans when he was talking about those who have a weak conscience. The person with a strong conscience can eat this meat, and he sees nothing wrong with it, but the weak conscience person sees something wrong with it. And so you have these kinds of conflicts. If you, for example, were brought up in Islam, your conscience might bother you even after you become a Christian. Mm-hmm. Your conscience might bother you because you're not going to worship and to pray in the mosque. And that conscience will have to be reconditioned until you come to the fact that, indeed, now that you know what the truth is, that part of your conscience does not control you, and eventually, of course, it falls in line. It'll fall in line with the truth. So there is that conditioning, but the point is still that every person has experienced a nagging conscience, which incidentally is quiet when we choose to sin. You know, when we choose to sin, the conscience kind of backs off, and we rationalize why we're going to do it. Afterwards, the conscience says, ha ha, look at what you've done. And it especially bothers us at night, especially in the morning. I think that one of the reasons that many people have to take sleeping pills is because they're dealing with guilt issues that have never been resolved.
Hmm. Talking to Dr. Erwin Lutzer, Lutzer, and the book is called The Power of a Clear Conscience. Let God Free You from Your Past. Harvest House is the publisher. I guess it's available anywhere books are sold, huh?
Oh, yes. And, you know, you can go to moodymedia.org. In fact, it would be wonderful if your listening audience were introduced to that, moodymedia.org. And you come to our website, so it's very easy to remember. You come to our website, it's available there, and other resources, other books that I've written.
You mentioned you think people take sleeping medication, a lot of them, because they have a lot of issues, I guess, guilt issues that people don't deal. How do you deal with the guilty conscience? I mean,
Apostle Paul said, and this would be one of my guiding verses in writing this book, I have a conscience, he said, that is free of offense before God and before others. So the first thing that we have to do is to have our conscience cleared before God. That comes understanding the fullness and the completeness of Christ's work. For example, in the book I have a chapter entitled, No Condemnation, No Need to Commit Suicide. There are plenty of people, something like 35,000 a year, I think, here in America, who commit suicide, because they've done something that has been so overwhelming, they have been so guilt-ridden, that it drives them to despair. Now, others may commit suicide because of depression, which may be unrelated to specific sins. But the point is that when we see the fact that the Bible not only talks about God's forgiveness, but the cleansing of the conscience, Then when we confess and we lay hold of the finished work of Jesus Christ, our conscience is cleared before God. But it may well be that the conscience, but that may not be the end of the game. You know, in my book, for example, I talk about men who perhaps have had an affair, and even if they break it off and their wife doesn't know about it, that still impacts their relationship with their wife, because there's something there. They will not be able to have a soul-to-soul relationship with their wife. And so I think that those kinds of things need to be brought to the light, perhaps with the help of a counselor or a pastor. But there are issues like this. I also give an example of a man who fathered a child when he was in college. And, you know, his wife doesn't know about it. His kids don't know about it. Well, he's going to have to deal with that, because there's no way that he can really make progress in the Christian life until those kinds of issues are addressed.
Talking to Dr. Erwin Lutzer, L-U-T-Z-E-R, Dr. Lutzer, we're talking about the power of a clear conscience. Ed, we've talked here, too, a lot of related to what Dr. Lutzer's talking about. We've talked a lot of over the years about people who've gotten abortions.
Right.
Women who got abortions when they were younger, or men who participated in abortions by facilitating or
right.
taking, and they carry that guilt with them for
yeah,
years.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Lutzer, I mean, let me ask you this. If a person gets right with God and finally comes to God and admits what they've done is wrong, and they find that forgiveness, how would you counsel them? And we just have probably about 45 seconds. How would you counsel them in terms of making certain things public? I mean, where's that line in terms of?
In the case of an abortion, I don't know that that needs to be made public, but a woman may have to confess that to her husband if she's now married and he doesn't know about it.
Right.
But if guilt returns after it's been confessed before God, as far as our relationship with God is concerned, people shouldn't go on confessing. They have to believe that he is faithful and righteous to forgive us and to cleanse us. And so they have to pause right there and thank God for his forgiveness, rather than being in the sinkhole of asking for forgiveness over and over again.
I like that's a great metaphor, sinkhole. No, it is. You know, yeah. you just can't ever get right. out. And there's, you know, I guess they try to dig their way, continue digging. And Dr. Lutzer, we are out of time. The power of a clear conscience. Let God free you from your past. Thank you, sir, for writing this book and for being here on the program with us. And best to you. I hope this book does really well.
Thank you, and God bless.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer joining us. Well, that's what Christ does,
right?
For us, he when we come to him and repent and confess, then he forgives us of our sins.
He does, and you know the thing for a lot of people, and we're out of time, but you know, for a lot of people is they have to believe that, like he said, that God is faithful and just to forgive us. And then you just have to, just stop carrying around the shame of that. If it's forgiven, the Bible says it's God has cast it as far as the east is from the west. It's a battle of faith to believe that God has forgiven you. And a lot of people struggle with that.
What do you think about his idea that people take a lot of sleeping pills today because...
It very well could be true.
Carrying guilt.
Yeah. They think you go to bed and your mind starts to... be yeah. drawn to what you've done wrong, and the only way to quiet that, they think, is to take a sleeping pill. But he's saying getting right with God is the answer.
Hey, we'll be back after this break. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Stay with us.
Mm-hmm. On the next Today's Issues, we'll continue to inform listeners.
I don't know anybody who's ever been pulled over for driving while gay.
Encourage Christians to make a difference.
Our encouragement to folks is to find some help to, in a Christian way, deal with the temptation.
And equip you to help restore the moral foundations of our nation.
It's the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekdays at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR or online at AFR.net.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stopped along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. I want to be upfront with you and admit I don't know anything about Pokemon, and I don't have a clue where he wants to go. I'm a child of the 80s. If you want to talk Donkey Kong or Tetris, I'm your guy. All that to say, this Pokemon Go craze has now become crazy. Some of these gamers seem to have lost their minds. A New Jersey man actually filed a lawsuit against the makers of Pokemon Go. He alleges the game is prompting players to trespass on private property. Imagine waking up and finding strangers in your backyard. Not cool. Then there's the Arizona couple who left their toddler at home alone so they could play virtual hide and seek. And in Winona, Minnesota, Pokemon players there desecrated a Veterans Memorial Park. Folks, there's a fine line between being a Pokemon fan and being a Pokemon punk. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments at AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We thank you for listening. Ed, what are ways people can listen to American Family Radio if they don't get a radio station on their dial?
Tim, I'm glad you asked. You know, you can go to the App Store and download the AFR app. And as you said in the past, you know, if you got a decent signal, you can download that in 60 seconds. And anywhere you have a good—
Download the app?
The app. You can listen to American Family Radio. You can do the same thing on your iPad. You can listen online if maybe you don't have an iPhone or you've got a dumb phone or something like that. You can
Some people do have dumb phones.
All phones are not created equal.
No, they're not.
So you can listen on your computer. You can go to AFR.net, as long as you're hooked up to the internet, and you can listen to American Family Radio. We live stream. We have podcasts. And
thousands of people listen to us on the internet.
Yes.
On their apps, on their smartphones. Folks, seriously, 60 seconds, you can download the app on your smartphone or your iPad or something kind of device like that. And then you can listen to AFR anywhere in the world on your computer, on that laptop or your iPad or your smartphone. It's very easy to do. So take advantage. Take advantage of that. Did I interrupt you? Were you going to say
no?
More?
No, that's okay. People want to. Some people can listen on a terrestrial radio, which means they're driving in an area that has a radio station. They can pick it up in their car or on, a radio CD player, at their home. But if they're not living close by, they can do it some of these other ways. We've provided an opportunity for them to stay connected to American Family Radio.
You can send us emails at comments@afr.net. If you want to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net. Brett Jackson, news director for One News Now. And American Family Radio News is in studio with us. A lot of stuff we want to talk about here with Fred. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Good to join you. I know you guys have been talking about Mr. Kaepernick.
Yeah, NFL quarterback, San Francisco 49ers.
We're getting reaction to that. You know, I mean, to do what he did, just in case folks are just joining us right now, to sit out the playing of the national anthem at a protest for what he called black oppression across the country. And the reaction that I have seen so far is very, very negative to what he did. He's being called on the carpet. Some people are also making the comparison. What would happen in an NFL player stated publicly somewhere he was in a restaurant and said, I believe in heterosexual marriage only, not homosexual marriage. What would the league have done with that player, with that quarterback that stated that publicly? What would happen? Or if he said, I believe homosexuality is a sin. They said that publicly. What would happen to that quarterback?
The NFL would have something to say, probably. Well, I know in the case of, Michael Sam was the player drafted from the University of Missouri. He was openly homosexual. During the NFL draft day, this is about 3 or 4 years ago, he was shown mouth-to-mouth kissing his lover.
Mm.
And a Miami Dolphin player tweeted, I think, that was gross.
Right.
That it was gross. And it was gross. He was only saying what the majority of Americans were saying. Mm-hmm. Seeing two men on national TV, especially during a draft when it's live, seeing them go at it mouth to mouth, it's gross.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the NFL fined the player for saying that.
Yeah.
And told him he had to go get re-educated go to sensitivity training.
He had to go to sense before he could rejoin the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the NFL has precedent for coming down on a player who your scenario for saying something that was
to me that's even far beyond, you know.
Thought police.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the ball player, his last name was Jones, I think, wasn't it? For the Miami Dolphins, I think he should be perfectly free to text and tweet, you know, whatever he wants. This is Colin Kaepernick doing this on the field while in a uniform.
On company time.
On company time. It's a good way of putting it.
And the company said, well, we believe in freedom of expression. And that goes to my point. What if the quarterback, in this case, what if Mr. Kaepernick said, you know what, I think homosexuality is deplorable.
Right.
And he said that. Would they still believe in freedom of expression?
Yeah, so we talked about this earlier before you came on, Fred, about this. Well, we'll see what happens with Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback there. I hope he will receive, criticism from his colleagues in the NFL.
You know, it depends. I don't know what, and I have not seen anything yet. It depends. If the NFL already has a policy that players are supposed to stand and show respect during the playing of the national anthem, then they should fine this guy. Mm-hmm. They should fine Kaepernick. Now, if it's not a policy, they ought to make one. So I'm not sure what the status is. But for the NFL to say, yeah, we have a policy, but freedom of expression means you're free to flaunt it.
Yeah.
Well, then fine. Then let other players flaunt policies. Let's see how far they get with those kind of things. They're very strict on what you can
let them let them go down on their knee and thank God when they score, do a good play. I mean, those kinds of things that we know have been publicly condemned,
right,
saying because you're offending somebody by doing that. Well, this Kaepernick offended a lot of people.
Absolutely.
When he did that. But what his team is saying, hey, we have to stand up for freedom of expression here. And so we're just going to let them do that.
Yeah. If the policy is already written, because I know we were talking about before the break, actually in the first segment, Fred, I know that the NFL has policies regarding what you wear when you go to the game, uh-huh, you get off the bus. Uh-huh. I think I believe all shirts and ties and suit coats, they want you to put up, because the fans see you getting off the bus and going in. If they have a policy, he should not be allowed to flaunt it. He mm-hmm. should be fined.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do or not. I doubt they do. I know with the San Francisco 49ers, they said the way
we, I think, strongly encourage our players to stand for the national anthem, but we don't compel them to. Something that made an interesting point I was reading this morning, that Jackie Robinson stood for the national anthem. I think Jackie Robinson had a lot tougher than time than
Colin. He actually went through terrible.
Oh, that was a terrible. That was a great movie, by the way. Mm-hmm. 42, mm-hmm. Is that the name of the movie? That was a great movie.
That was Honest to Goodness Oppression.
Right, Jackie Robinson stood for the national. Right. When you stand, like I said, if this were to become a trend, where players refuse to stand for the national anthem, it would be terrible for our country, because it could drift down to even a high school level where you got kids saying, "I'm not standing for the," because I got a grievance, so I'm not standing.
Right.
And, you know, when you're standing for the national anthem, you're not standing for everything the country does.
And you're not saying, "I believe in everything the country does."
Right.
No. You're not saying that.
No. You're saying, "I stand to honor my country."
Yes.
As a.
Because it's a great place to live.
Right. Right. That's why I, Colin Kaepernick, can make millions of dollars.
That's right. Where else in the world, Mr. Kaepernick, can you make $19 million a year for throwing the ball?
Throwing the football. Right. Around or that that people don't care that you're black, although he's think about racial, but I mean people don't care.
No, nope.
So that's a I don't know these people protest. I think it's going to hurt him. By the way, if he even makes it anymore as an NFL quarterback. All right, so Fred, what's happening with the what's in the news? What are you going to talk about?
Let's roll back to 2008.
Okay.
Remember all the programs, especially here, American Family Radio, when they were trying to push Obamacare through, all the warnings that this wasn't going to work because one, because two, because three. Well, this morning there's a story on One News Now that you need to read. And it's under the headline, "What Would Clinton Do With Mounting Obamacare Crisis?" And that's where we are with Obamacare, folks.
What's happening?
It didn't take long, did it?
Premiums. The big companies got involved with Obamacare. They got roped in. They said, right. Yeah, because they thought a whole pile of people were going to sign up for Obamacare. They're going to get on these exchanges.
And the government guaranteed them money, too.
Yeah, you're going to make big bucks.
Right.
Well, some of the biggies are leaving. There are some states now where the exchanges, you're only going to have one choice. There's only one.
When you say Obamacare and exchanges, those are synonymous.
That's where you go sign up.
Right.
If you get Obamacare.
And people aren't signing up.
Well, yeah. And look what's happening. And this is just what in Tennessee last week, the individual health insurance market in her state near collapse. That's what the insurance commissioner is saying there. Because premiums for the biggest insurer are expected to increase by an average 62% next year. Two competitors will post averages increasing 46 and 44% for their premiums. They're not making any money because guess what? Because of that proviso that was in there, pre-existing conditions do not disqualify you. A lot of very sick people are signing up very quickly. And so the costs have risen dramatically. So the big companies are getting out of it. And so what this story says, one of the things they say Clinton could do, which they're already doing, is more subsidies.
You mean should she be elected?
Should she be elected president? How would she fix? And everybody understands there are huge problems here. Remember one of the things that we predicted when we were talking about Obamacare? They assumed healthy people were going to sign up.
Let's explore that a little bit, because a lot of people listening, their eyes are rolling back in their head. They're not understanding this. The way for an insurance company to be able to make money, to be profitable, okay, they've got to pay out less than they take in. That's any business has to.
Yeah.
So the way insurance works, Fred, is that the healthy people, the premiums that healthy people pay in, pay for the minority of people in the system who are sick, and the companies have to pay out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you're saying is that when Obamacare was first initiated, that sick people signed up in droves because Obamacare said insurance companies in Obamacare cannot count previously existing conditions.
Yes.
So a person who had a health had a heart surgery, mm-hmm. a lot of insurance companies say, well, we're not going to cover you because the likelihood is your heart problems will come back.
Pre-existing
conditions.
Keep in mind, this is not a insurance company canceling somebody because they get sick. That's illegal, I think, and certainly immoral, because you know what I'm saying? But what you're talking about, and I never understand this part of Obamacare myself, how can you compel a private insurance company to accept people who already have pre-existing conditions? You get enough of those people that bankrupt you.
Well, but see, this is the thing. These private insurance companies believe what they were told by the people promoting Obamacare, that you're going to have all kinds of healthy people signing up too.
To cover it.
Yes. And that will help it cover it.
And that didn't happen.
And it's not happening.
Oh, okay. So they're faced with...
And these are some of these young people.
But this is what the argument against Obamacare at the time was. That's your point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We warn people, wait a minute. How are you going to... These young people are not going to sign up.
Right.
These young people, many who voted for Barack Obama twice, they're not signing up.
Right.
Because
they're generally healthier because they're younger.
And the talk at the time, well, if you don't sign up, we're going to penalize you.
Right.
You're going to get a penalty the first year. I think it was $300. The second year, $600 or whatever. Well, the young people are saying, well, I'm not going to pay $300 a month for 12 months when I can get away with paying a fine one time for the year for $300.
Right.
I'm not sick. I don't need insurance. I'll take the penalty. I'm not going to buy into it. And so you've got all these young people that they said were going to sign up because they fear the fine.
So is it
going to
collapse?
It's near that right now. 70%, I think at least 70% of the people who have signed up for Obamacare now are getting subsidies. One of two things are going to happen. What's going to happen is the subsidies are going to go up. If Hillary Clinton is elected president, expect a huge increase in subsidies. Somebody in the tax system is going to have to pay
subsidies
for that.
Subsidies to who? The insurance companies?
No, subsidies to the people who are buying. Whose
premiums are going to go up.
So the government will cover what is going up.
Exactly. The government.
The government, the taxpayers.
What's bizarre is that the taxpayers who have their own insurance premiums to pay mm-hmm. now have tax money coming out of their pocket paying for somebody else's insurance.
And now here's the other scary thing that was predicted. You guys will remember this. Perhaps this story is saying what Mrs. Clinton could do is introduce a government-sponsored public option as an alternative to private insurers. Now, just lay that out for people.
What does that mean?
That means the companies will all bow out of this, and the government comes
outright in. Outright socialized medicine.
Which single there are player. A lot of people who said that was the goal all along.
I think
it was.
Exactly.
Think about it. Think about it for a minute. I think it was. I tend to believe that myself. Think about it for a minute. If you set up Obamacare, of course, remember that this is all on the Democrats.
Not a single Republican signed up.
No, this was Democrats only. They passed it by themselves. And remember, they used a special legislative trick to get it passed. It was called reconciliation, right. I think is the name of it anyway. They basically ramrodded this thing down the throats of the Republicans.
Remember the Nancy Pelosi clip? I wish we could find that. You'll have to pass it to find out what's in it.
Right,
because
right.
it was over 2,000 pages,
right.
and they rammed it through, and most legislators, right. Republican and Democrat, if you ask them if they read the whole thing, well, no, I didn't have time.
In fact, that was probably the impetus that led to the Tea Party revolt in 2010 mm-hmm. that changed the Congress, and it's been in Republican control ever since. But to follow this conspiracy theory, that this was intended to lead us to socialized medicine outright. That is what you do is you set up Obamacare, which is a government / supposedly private insurance company hybrid, if you will. If it collapses, then the liberal mind is thinking if it collapses, then the American people don't have anywhere to go but to socialized medicine or single payer, and it'll be attractive to them because they won't have to pay as much.
So socialized medicine, I'm just off the top of my head, this is a very complicated issue, but
it
socialized
is.
Medicine would be, well, the government will pay
government
your
run health care. I think it's government run health care. Government, you have to check in with some kind of government agency to find out which doctor you're appointed to go see.
Right, well, the government pays the doctors.
The government pays
the
doctor. The government pays what they attract you with. Is you don't have to pay health insurance anymore.
You just right. go, hey, listen, I'm from Canada. Most people know, our listeners know that by now.
Right.
Socialized medicine.
Right.
You walk in the doctor's office, you got your little card. All right. So, and basically no one is rejected. If you live in the country 6 months or more, you get your little card and you go to the doctor's office and you don't get those bills in the mail that we're all accustomed to in living in this country. But here's the difference. It begins to run out of money sooner or later. Socialized medicine. The Brits have been facing this now. The doctors are moving away from Britain because they can make a whole lot of money in other places, a lot more money. But here's what also happens. When I go home to visit my relatives in Canada, in the local paper, it is quite common to see this emergency at this hospital will be closed, emergency room will be closed down this weekend. If you got an emergency, you got to go to the next city. It's because they're running out of money. This is what's happening.
So they're making cuts.
Consolidating services because they're running out of money. The second part of all of this is, let's say that you need a hip replacement. All right? In a lot of places in this country, doctor diagnosed you need a hip replacement. Okay, I'm going to schedule for you next month. In these places with socialized medicine, months and months and months you have to wait. Because they've only got so much money.
They allocate money for this procedure. And when it runs out, the hospital that does it, they don't do anymore.
Well, the other factor
until
is
the next month
how old are you? You know, if you're 75, all right. You know, you only got a few years left. We're not going to spend the money on you.
Right.
This is the other part of the calculus in all of this that you got to factor in.
Another thing, if you're talking about socialized medicine, now, to some extent, we have socialized medicine. You have Medicare and Medicaid. So you have the government's involvement in medicine and medical treatment already to some extent. But not controlling everything outright, which is what people argue. If Obamacare fails, then the liberals, especially should Clinton win, or the Democrats take back. If that happens, then what they'll try to institute is outright socialized medicine, most likely. Now, the thing that, again, that's attractive to people is you tell them no more health insurance. You don't have to pay anymore. Okay, it's free. The government's going
to take it. You need a test, you go down to the doctor, they do it.
But what a lot of people, I think Americans generally understand this, but I don't know what percentage. Your quality of care, Fred's alluded to this, is going to be greatly reduced if it's free. Quote, free. Understand? Free.
Right.
Free to you. And what you trade in for free is the government dictating to you the care you're going to get.
So and which doctor you can see.
And the other factor is here, a lot of, I didn't have the grades nor the desire to be a doctor or a nurse. And countless people are thankful for that, but who I would have come in contact with and ruined their life. But what I'm saying is a lot of people go into medicine because it pays well.
Right.
All right. Smart people. And I'm not saying they don't go into medicine because they don't care about people and want to help people. They obviously do as a profession. But also it's you go to school for 8 years, 10 years, specialize in how to do surgery on a heart. Somebody better pay me.
Right.
Well, I'm not doing this for, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. So you're rewarded for your knowledge and your expertise. That's the way it is in every other part of American free enterprise life. And so if you have the government take over the system and somebody sitting there in college going, maybe I don't, man. Why do I want to be a doctor and have my salary regulated when I'm smart enough to go into engineering or go into some other field where I can potentially make more income based on my skill level?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So you see how that dumbs down the medical system and the quality of your treatment over time? That's what will happen if socialized medicine is implemented should Obamacare collapse, and it looks like it's headed toward collapse, and those opportunists would say, see, we just need the government to take over the whole thing because Obamacare is not working.
One way or the other, the government is going to take over because if these companies are bowing out, then the subsidies have to go up. More tax dollars are going to be spent. The other thing is,
we're $20 trillion in debt right now. Nobody's even talking about this anymore.
I know, it's amazing.
But to add to what you're saying, I'm saying to add, yep. You're going to be adding more to the...
Exactly. Or they'll find some other way. Like socialized medicine in Canada, you pay for it every time you fill up your gas tank in your car.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So taxes.
Because it's costing $4 to $5 a gallon, right, roughly, to fill up your car in Canada. Most of that, or a huge portion of it, is going to health care. So you're paying for it. You're paying. It's just hidden. Which is right. Governments are very good at that, you know.
I don't know, the cost of health care prior to Obamacare was pretty high.
Yeah, the system was having huge problems anyway.
Before, but Obamacare is not the answer. It's only made things worse, it seems to me. And health insurance is not like anything else, and this is why the expense of it is so much. I think we don't care, you know, we don't care what it costs when we're sick,
right,
or grandma's in the hospital with cancer. For somebody to bring up the idea that you have to pay for it sounds inhumane. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when somebody says you're sick, you need surgery or you're going to lose your arm or you're going to die, you don't say, well, I wonder how much that's going to cost me.
Right.
Huh? What, can you give me a round figure so I can maybe negotiate with somebody else? No, you say, I don't care what it costs. A human life is worth whatever it costs.
Right.
So you put that, which is true. Human life is invaluable.
Right.
But you apply that to the real world, you see how expenses go up because people... And we've become so litigious, we sue everybody for everything.
Right.
So doctors have to do six tests when they don't need six tests because they're trying to cover their rear end,
right,
from somebody suing them. Because, you know what I'm saying? It's just, I don't know. It's just...
It's a mess.
It's a mess. Mm-hmm. Your initial story here is that Obamacare is likely to collapse in the next year.
As predicted.
As predicted. For all the reasons that were predicted at the time.
And my understanding is that some of these issues, the Obama administration is wanting the reporting agencies within the federal government to wait until after the election to give the bad news.
Yeah.
Because Hillary Clinton is basically promising a third term Obama term, and she's fully in support of Obamacare. Yeah. And if all these notices of rate hikes and everything come out before the election, people are going to be going, oh, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just goes to show you how the fix is in.
Absolutely.
Pushing the federal government to not release this bad news until after the election.
I wonder what percentage of Americans would be in favor of single-payer outright socialized medicine. Has there been any surveys on that?
Well, unfortunately, it's almost like when Obamacare was introduced in 2008. They made it sound so good, Tim.
Yeah.
That a lot of people said, wait a minute, you know, pre-existing conditions, the whole thing, that sounds really good. Plus, I'm going to get subsidized. A lot of these folks went into this who didn't have insurance.
You can't out free Democrats now.
Right.
You can't, huh?
You know, they went into this, but then they found out, well, I can get insurance for, you know, $150 a month. But then they found out, what deductible, what's that? No one talked about deductibles.
Right.
$6,000 deductible. So they're showing up at the doctor's office saying, I got my Obamacare card. Oh, wait a minute, you got a $6,000 deductible. What's that? Well, you'll find out.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's the...
it's amazing.
Oh, my word. Okay. So, other than that, the world's going pretty great, folks, out there. We'll be back after this break for news here on American Family
Radio.
Thanks
for the good news, Fred.
Yeah, thank you, Fred.
That's what I'm here, folks.
The imminent collapse of Obamacare. And so we'll see.
Oh, we can say I told you so.
Yeah. We'll be back after this short timeout. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.